Welcome to Throwing Mountains Weekly Strength. I'm your host, Chris Bollinger. For the next 10 minutes or so, we're going to draw strength from the Bible. I encourage you to make this a daily practice on your own. The first Weekly Strength series focused on God in our day-to-day lives. This week's episode kicks off the second Weekly Strength series. The focus of the second series is the nature of God. What is God really like? What are some aspects of God's character that are discussed in the Bible? Today I'm going to discuss God as the cornerstone. The Bible passage for this episode is Matthew 7, 24 to 27, which is the end of the Sermon on the Mount. I'll read it from the New International Version, the NIV. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. To understand the importance of the cornerstone in biblical times, you have to understand a little about home construction. I'm not an expert on home construction, then or now, but I do know one thing that has been a problem for home builders and homeowners for thousands of years, and that's water. In late September of 2022, people in Southwest Florida saw firsthand how destructive water can be when Hurricane Ian hit. With many hurricanes, it's the wind that causes most of the damage. And Ian had wind. Wind with speeds over 200 miles an hour did some serious damage to roofs and other structural elements of houses and other buildings all over Southwest Florida. But with Ian, the water was more destructive, much more destructive. Ian brought a storm surge that was 15 feet high. The water didn't rise gradually, eventually reaching a level 15 feet higher than normal. In coastal areas such as Fort Myers Beach, the storm surge was like a 15-foot high wave or a 15-foot high wall of water that was everywhere at once. It was intensely powerful and relentless. My wife Libby and her brother and sister jointly owned a house at the north end of Fort Myers Beach. This house had been in their family since at least the 60s. It was a quaint two-bedroom beach house on stilts right on the bay that runs down the east side of Fort Myers Beach, which essentially is a narrow island. The Gulf of Mexico is only about 150 yards, or meters for you folks outside the U.S., to the west of the house. This house had seen a lot of hurricanes up close. A few of the hurricanes did some damage, but it was minor. So when the evacuation order came out the day before Ian hit, my brother-in-law and his wife, who were living there with their young son, initially considered staying put. In the end, they decided to go to my mother-in-law's house about 10 miles inland. They packed lightly, figuring they'd be back at the beach in 24 hours or a few days at the most. They did go back in a few days, but their house, a beach house that had survived over 60 years of hurricanes, was gone. It literally was washed away, along with all their possessions and, sadly, their family cat. Many other houses were washed away by Ian's wall of water, too. So were quite a few people. The damage caused by Ian's storm surge is hard to describe. Libby and I were in Ohio when Ian hit. We raced to the Fort Myers area right after the storm so that Libby could check on her immediate family members who all live there and so that she could help with recovery efforts in the area. She thrives on helping people who have been impacted by disasters. Within a few days, Libby found someone she could help. It was a woman on the other side of the same bay on which the family beach house had stood. Locals call her the Dolphin Lady, because she names and keeps track of dozens of the dolphins that live in the bay. For several weeks, Libby went to the Dolphin Lady's house to help her clean up after the hurricane. I joined Libby on the second or third day. As we approached the woman's neighborhood, I saw boats lodged in cypress trees, 5 or 10 feet off the ground. When we got on the Dolphin Lady street, we had to pull into someone's yard to avoid an obstacle on the street. The obstacle was a 50-foot yacht, completely on land, with its bow blocking the entire street. At the Dolphin Lady's house, there was debris everywhere, piled 6 to 8 feet high in some places. Large pieces of drywall, wooden frames that had sat behind drywall, chunks of plywood that had formed subfloors, appliances, mattresses. If it had been part of the first floor of a residence on the street, then it probably was sitting outside somewhere. It looked like a set of short tornadoes had parked themselves in the neighborhood for an hour or so. On top of two piles of debris, there were boats. Not little rowboats, 20-foot powerboats, just sitting there, like they'd been parked there. The bow of one of them had pierced the garage door on the Dolphin Lady's house. It was bizarre. And now that I'm a resident of the Fort Myers area for 6 or 7 months a year, I hope I never see anything like it again. Of course, Hurricane Ian is an extreme example of the destructive power of water. You probably don't live in an area where a hurricane poses such a threat. When you're building a house, however, you have to consider what threats water can pose in your area. At the time of Jesus, a typical home near the Sea of Galilee was a square structure with mud bricks and flat field stones layered in courses 1 story tall, topped by a flat roof of stone slabs stretched across wooden beams. But what was the foundation of such a home? The soil in that region was sandy. During the dry and hot summer, that soil would become hard-baked, almost like concrete. When winter rains came, however, the baked sand could dissipate in a flash, causing everything on it to collapse. To have a secure foundation, a man would have to dig below the sandy soil until he reached volcanic rock. Using hand chisels, he would dig a trench in that rock, one wide enough to inset the first course of field stone or brick. If there wasn't enough rock for the entire foundation, then he needed at least enough for one corner of the house. There, he would lay the crucial stone, the cornerstone. This required precise angles and orientation to ensure the structural integrity of the rest of his home. Jesus was a carpenter by trade, but when he discussed foundations and cornerstones, he wasn't giving advice on home construction. He was talking about life and about God. In Isaiah 28:16, God promised his people that he would lay as a foundation in Zion, a stone, a tested stone, a precious cornerstone of a sure foundation. In Psalm 118:22, David recognized that this vital cornerstone would be one that the builders rejected. Zechariah 10:3-4 foretold that it would come from Judah. The cornerstone would not be a stone. It would be a man of authority. Jesus acted with authority, and the religious leaders didn't like it. Shortly after Jesus cleansed the temple, they challenged him in the temple courts. "Tell us by what authority you are doing these things," they said to him. "Who gave you this authority?" Jesus answered their question in this parable. A man plants a vineyard, rents out the land, and goes away. At harvest time, he sends a servant to ask the tenants for some of the grapes. The tenants beat the servant and throw him out. The owner sends another servant. Same result. He sends a third. Same result. Finally, the owner of the vineyard sends his son, whom the tenants surely will respect. But the tenants, recognizing that the son is the heir, kill him. Rather than giving the tenants the inheritance, the owner kills them and gives the vineyard to others. Jesus finished the parable by citing Psalm 118:22 and adding, "Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces, and when it falls on anyone, it will crush him. The answer to the religious leader's question was this: God gave Jesus his authority. Jesus was the prophesied cornerstone. Faced with a fundamental challenge to what they believed, the religious leaders responded just as the tenants had. They rejected the Son and killed him. How will you respond? What kind of life do you want to build? Next week, we'll talk about another aspect of the nature of God. God as our Heavenly Father. I hope you'll join me for that. Please pick up a copy of 52 Weeks of Strength for Men. You'll find it to be a good resource on this journey. Have a good week, men.